I think it's more intuitive. My body reacts to mistakes or misalignments. Sometimes I'm like, oh my God, I'm nauseous over that interaction. Then you're like, okay, I got to listen to that. If something doesn't feel good, I'm getting better at saying I'm not going to force it.
Hello, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. On the show, I interview peak performing world changers in the creative, social impact, and vegan spaces. If you like what you hear on this episode, you're going to want to check out the bonus mini episode that you can access if you DM me at Isolde T on Instagram and you let me know you want it. You'll get access to bonus episodes, new art, my latest writing, and other fun benefits. And now, let's get to the show. Hello, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. Super happy that you're here and super happy and honored to have my guest this week, Rena Friedman-Watts. You need to check out this about her. There's not much she hasn't done in her professional life. She scoured the NPR newswire for stories. She's combed through hundreds of small claims cases. She's worked on reality TV shows such as The Jerry Springer Show, Court TV, and Nanny 911. She's worked in radio. She's planned mega events for the telecom and finance industries. Rena has a talent for connecting people and building communities. Ideas for how people can achieve the fantastic flow out of her head effortlessly, and her diverse background and skill set allow her to seamlessly weave in and out of multiple markets and open doors that remain closed to others. Rena is the host of the new podcast, Better Call Daddy. She's telling stories that haven't been told and sprinkling them with wisdom from one of her most trusted advisors, her dad. How cool is Rena? Rena, thank you so much for being here. Welcome.
Isolde, oh my God, I just could listen to your voice all day. Thank you so much for having me.
You're so fabulous. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I was a radio DJ a long time ago on the graveyard shift. So it was like WABX, all rock, all the time.
I love it. Oh my gosh. Yes, your voice is so calming.
Oh, wow. Well, hopefully it falls on the calming side, not on the snoozing, boring side. Let's hope for that. So I'm thrilled to have you here on the show. I was just on your show last week and we had an intense conversation, and you're such a wonderful host and such a wonderful speaker. And I'm willing to bet that so much of this comes from the work you've done on reality TV shows, NPR news, where all of these different ways that you have been involved in communication. And I'm wondering, is this something that you've picked up, a skill like that? Or how did you begin to realize that this is the work of your life, this way of reaching out to people and connecting them?
Yeah, I do believe that it really has built upon itself incrementally. Mm. It's funny because I just recently interviewed an executive producer who I worked alongside at Nanny 911. And she too started as an intern, became a story editor, was a transcriber, and now she's an executive producer. She's worked on huge productions. And I, like her, very similarly, started as an intern, was an assistant editor, became a post-production supervisor, was a field interviewer. I tried all different roles in production and in post-production. I worked in radio, I worked in TV, I've worked in podcasting, and I saw what I liked, saw what I didn't like, was nice to everyone along the way, which is something that you have to do to work in the industry.
For sure.
And learned how to play to my strengths. Like, what lit me up? What got me the best results? What did people come to me wanting to learn? And I started paying attention to that.
I'm taking all of that in for a second because, first of all, it's a lot, but also, this notion of paying attention and playing to your strengths. This is the Innovative Mindset Podcast, after all, so I kind of want to get into your mindset. How did you get to that place of, you know what, I need to play to my strengths. I need to figure out what they are, what lights me up, and then work on that. How did you get to that sort of way of thinking to get to this place now where you've got successful hit podcasts and doing all this other stuff?
So, you know, that saying like success leaves clues type of thing.
Right.
So in the beginning, I do believe some of it was being at the right place at the right time, being risky, being bold, having a dad that encouraged me to take those kinds of opportunities. That was the beginning. I went to a youth performing arts school. That is a story in itself, but I really loved to sing as a child, loved to perform for my family. It's funny, I didn't love large crowds. So even though I had a talent for singing and loved music and it moved my soul, I did discover that even though I got into a youth performing arts school, I was not one of those people that got lit up on stage, but I did like collaborating with other performers and I loved being in the performance community. So I started like seeing what part of that I loved. That led me to working at a radio station in college. And then I loved that format. It's funny, when people weren't in the radio station, I would be singing in there and recording myself and playing with all of the tools. And then from working at an NPR station in college, I interviewed at WGN in Chicago. I didn't get the job, saw that Jerry Springer was looking for interns. So it was in entertainment. I walked across to NBC Tower, got myself an internship. So crazy. And then at Springer, I started hearing people on the phone and I saw who was getting the best guests. And I was like, I could do that. I started imitating the craziest people on the phone. And so I went from intern to producer in one season.
Wow.
Yeah, it was intense. And I was so determined to make it. But at the same time, it's really funny. Oh my gosh, I just talked to somebody else about this live the other day. I was not a good manager. I learned that. Mm-hmm. But what I was good at was bringing people to the party. Like, I was good at booking the guests. I was good at riling them up. I was good at pitching the stories. But as far as training other people, I definitely was not good at that. I was like, look, knock on my door when you have a story. Otherwise, I'm going to book it. I'm going to brief it. I'm going to write it. I'm doing it all.
So delegation is not your strong suit there.
Exactly. But the thing is you really go further if you can train people up around you and build other people on your team. And I have matured into doing that.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me, collaboration is so important. And because my favorite saying is, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. It's an African proverb. And I love that saying because it does sort of say, hey, collaboration is the way to go. So when you collaborate, how do I ask this? How do you know who has the strengths to delegate this task or that task to on your team?
Some of it is experimenting. Some of it is like, hey, I could use help with these things. Why don't you give it a go? And then you see how that goes.
I love it. I love it. So we know you worked on the Jerry Springer show. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be like a star climber or whatever. I kind of want to know, what was that like? What was it like working with on nationally syndicated show like that? And what was it like specifically being around someone who, I don't think he's as volatile in person as he is on screen, but he's got a pretty strong personality. How did that work for you? Does it fit with who you are, or were there sometimes challenges that you had to navigate?
Yeah, that's really funny. So I am born and raised in Kentucky. And so some of those stories were not that far-fetched from stories that I had heard. My father and his parents ran a manufacturing company and it was a factory. So they employed people out of prison. They gave people jobs that maybe other people wouldn't. I worked in my dad's factory over summers, so I learned a lot there about those kind of stories. I do think that part of the reason I was successful in booking those stories is because I wasn't judgmental and because I, was open to hearing those people's stories.
It's so interesting that you say that, because being open, having an open mind, being receptive to things that are different from who you are or what you do or what you think, I think is so crucial, more crucial today than ever before. How do you cultivate that? How do you, I know you said you were always open-minded, but do you keep trying to grow that skill in yourself?
Oh, definitely. I mean, if you haven't seen the wide range of guests that I've had on my show, I'm always pushing the envelope. And here's the thing, like when I worked at Springer, all of those stories start to run together, and even court TV too. The majority of stories in court TV were people suing each other over a rental, you know, a lease. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But when you find that story of somebody suing over the wrong crossbred animal or, you know, throwing a steel water bottle at somebody's car and causing damage, like, wow. You know, I was always looking for the diamond in the rough story. Mm-hmm. I'm always looking for something just a little bit weird or out there or different. Yeah. Even when I worked at the NPR station, you know, the stories that are coming across the newswire, like, how can I make this more interesting? Like, how can I find a weird one? Right. I've always had that story junkie in me. So I do think that that is also a strength. I think that that has led to me finding interesting stories for even my show. You know, I've heard people pouring their heart out on Clubhouse, and then I'll message them, or, you know, I'll see a interesting person on Twitter or LinkedIn, even just sharing a really personal story. I've found guests everywhere that are willing to be open, are willing to be open books, are willing to pour their heart out. Sometimes people do it so much where I'm like, I hope they don't regret that after.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I'll bring back to a little bit about our interview when I was on your show. I don't normally talk about that stuff. So it was really interesting to go into, and that points to your skill as an interviewer. It was interesting and vulnerable to go into some of those things that I just don't really talk about publicly that often. And so when you yourself are doing that, when you're sort of teasing out those more personal stories, I guess I have to ask, what are you going for? What do you hope the result will be? And also, what's a good story? What makes for a good story?
Yeah, so I would say that I would hope that by me getting somebody to really paint a picture of something difficult that they have experienced, that it will encourage somebody else to feel like what they've experienced is okay too.
Yeah, like they're not alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so important. So,
and even I've had people even that I've known very well now, that I've grown up with, DM me from different stories that I've covered and reveal to me things that I was so shocked to find out. Mm.
Yeah.
But when you really get somebody to speak from their heart and paint that picture, you know, to the point where somebody else can put themselves in their shoes, that is so powerful. I love when that happens. That to me is magic. It invigorates me in some ways.
Oh, I'm sure. And so stepping a little bit back, what are the elements for you of a story? What should be in a story? I know we hear journalistically what, where, when, how, why. We hear beginning, middle, end. We hear, have a conflict and then resolve it. For you, as a podcast host, as someone who's been in communication for as long as you have, what do you think are the elements of a truly great story?
That's a great question. I will say, you don't even have to tell the whole story. Mm. It's really just somebody who can tell a story in a way where they're not holding back. They can just give you a piece of it. Even the best stories are just the ones where it's unfiltered. It's raw. I've interviewed people that don't even want to give the whole thing, but it's the energy. It's the passion. It's the way that they tell that little piece. People can put together even the rest of the story. it's really the way that they tell it with how they tell it. And you know what's interesting too? It doesn't even have to be like cathartic. Like there was somebody who I learned this at Springer also, because you know, you have a great show and the crowd goes wild and then you want every guest to be like that guest, but you can't make everybody guest everybody the same way as that, you know?
Sure.
So sometimes people can tell a story softly or weirdly or funny. It's getting people to be so comfortable with who they are that that shines through.
It seems to me, though, that you would have to get, you'd have to help them somehow as the producer or something like that, break past some barriers, like knock down some walls in order for them to be able to be that way. And what was your role and how did you do it when you were in TV or even on radio? How did you help people who might not be able to do that to do that?
Yeah, that's a great question too. So now it's a lot easier because there's so much information about people online. You can see what they post. You can see the quotes that they're into, the artwork that they post, what is important to them. Have they been interviewed before? What are they sharing? So that really helps in breaking down that wall. Mm-hmm. And I start with that. I find something that they love or something that they've accomplished or something that they're sharing. I usually start with that to warm them up. Yeah. Then I go into a deeper conversation. Mm. But I definitely do my research as to what they're up to recently. Who are they interviewing recently? Whose shows did they say okay to? And if there's none of that online, you might want to do a pre-interview first. Mm. Get to know that person. Ask mm-hmm. them what they're up to, what they're passionate about, what could they speak on? You know, do some icebreaker type of conversations. At Springer, it was really easy because they call the 1-800 number. 1-800-96-JERRY, they used to call in with their story and you just call back, you say you're with the show, that creates a level of excitement in itself. They're like, really? I'm like, yeah, really. And then you see if the other people that are involved in the story right away are interested and they're players too, right? Mm. Like everybody has to be on board for the story. So before you get too excited about the person who calls in, because they're always the excited one, you have to find out if the other parties are going to be able to come too.
So there's a lot of sort of herding of cats, if you will, in order to get some of this stuff to happen.
Oh, definitely.
When you're in that space, though, when you're like, oh, I'm doing my research, people are calling me, I have to sort of verify the truth of what's going on and all of that. A few years ago, you would have been scouring newspapers and then Google came along and that became a lot easier. But now we have places like LinkedIn and sites like that. How do you use them for your work now? How do you use LinkedIn, let's say, for this kind of, or maybe you use it for different research or different methods altogether, but how do you use the current technology in order to do the work of your life?
Yeah, that's a great question. I sometimes search by hashtags. That's a really easy way. Like recently I was like, I think it'd be cool to interview an executioner. So wow. I went onto like Twitter. I'm like, hashtag executioner. Tried it on LinkedIn, tried it on Facebook. I mean, if you have an idea, entertain it, right? I've done that. But also there's so many people now just sharing their stories everywhere that honestly, if you scroll not too long, you're going to find something interesting. And a lot of times too, somebody will share their story and then an even better story will happen in the comments. So you can reach out to the person in the comment and be like, hey, I saw your comment on so-and-so's post. That really spoke to me. I'd love to connect with you. That's how I use LinkedIn for research. And then as far as like sharing on LinkedIn, like I was in a LinkedIn audio room the other day, and LinkedIn audio is not by any means as popular as Clubhouse got yet, but it's new, which is cool because it's intimate still, where you might get 15 people in a room and you might really have a close connection with everyone in there because it's not so saturated yet. Anyway, we had this great conversation. It actually goes alongside with what we're talking about. You know, how do you get people to be vulnerable? And I snapshotted the room. I shared three takeaways from the conversation. I tagged all the people that were in the room, and then boom, it got like 3,000 views just from offering value. And then all of those people are like your new friends.
Amazing. Oh my goodness. So you've taught me something very important. I didn't know there was a LinkedIn audio. That's very cool. And I guess it's kind of like Twitter Spaces and Clubhouse and places like that where, yes, where people can have audio conversations. I'm so glad about that, actually, because I felt like we went straight from sort of blogging and podcasting to video. And where was the audio portion? I felt like, wait, I want that too. So it's very exciting that these technologies are happening. And within all of that, you know, you've gotten all of that kind of experience. You've done all of this work to give value and to do, it's just a ton of, like, when I read your bio, I'm like, oh my goodness, she's been everywhere and done everything. And you're also a mom, and you call yourself a mompreneur, which I love. So how do you balance all of that? How do you give your family what they need while at the same time paying enough attention to your business, to your career?
That's a great question. Wow, you are so good at asking questions. It's a struggle. You know, the other night, a guy that I had done some production work with in town, he just recently purchased a new studio in Chicago. And I told him I was moving. He was kind of bummed. He was like, I would really love you to see my new space. And I was like, well, there's a podcaster that just recently interviewed me at her studio, and I would love to interview her back. How about, you know, we'll showcase your new spot. I'll interview her, then I'll interview you, and I'll bring my daughter along. It's called multitasking. Make the most of your time, right? So
for sure,
my daughter enjoyed meeting somebody who was in the fashion industry and watching mommy do an interview. I got to thank the guy that let me use the studio by doing an interview for him, and I got three segments.
Amazing. I love it. And so you're doing all of this, you're raising your daughter and doing, you know, you're married, you've got many people that you are sort of responsible to and responsible for, and you've got to hit podcasts in addition to all the other stuff. Can you tell me a little bit about what the podcast is, what made you start it, and what have you learned making your own podcast as opposed to working for somebody like Jerry Springer?
That's so good. So the podcast came about because my dad is my biggest cheerleader, biggest fan, biggest advocate.
I love that.
And he's always wanted to have his own show. So I'm like, who better to start a show with than your dad, who's never going to back out on you?
I love it.
Yeah. And so I kind of took the concept from Springer. I'm like, I'll find the wild and crazy stories. I'll interview the guests. People who interest me, that can tell a good story. I'll share the stories with my dad. He'll weigh in and give us the final thought. That's where that came about. And
lovely.
What it has turned into is just, I just never would have imagined all of the opportunities that would come from it. It turned into me producing a healthcare podcast locally in Chicago all of last year. I'm now producing another show remotely in the healthcare space. I've done just some other one-off, you know, production things. I've collaborated with cameramen in town and other content creators. You know, my daughter's come out of her shell. She's done some of the intros. My son's done some of the transitions. My husband's done a couple reactions. My dad has gotten way more comfortable on the mic. I mean, who knows? Maybe he'll have his own show one day. I mean, it's been really cool. And not only that, but I've connected with so many other podcasters, and there's a whole podcasting community, and I'm constantly connecting podcasters with podcasters because we all love creating content, right?
For sure.
Yeah. So it's just, I can't wait to see what this next year holds, because I know that if you stay with it and you're consistent and you enjoy it and you play to your strengths, it just grows exponentially and opportunities happen, like interviewing Jerry Springer and Judge Alex and one of the nannies from Nanny 911 that I never would have gotten the opportunity to do had I not started my show.
Right. And that's the thing. It's a little bit of an if you build it, they will come kind of situation, right? You start the podcast and people start hearing about it. And then all of a sudden you're off to the races and the roller coaster ride is really fun. And yet you're still, you know, there's the creative part of it, but there's also sort of the management part of it. You have to manage all of the details. You have to figure out which kid is going to do the the transition. If you've got a segue to do or a sweep, which kid's going to do that? How do you keep it all straight? Do you have an amazing assistant? Do you do it all yourself? Do you have a sort of a content management system? What do you do to keep it all straight and to keep making such incredible progress?
Thank you. I do have an editor, and I've had an editor from the very beginning.
Mm.
I will say, though, that, you know, just depending on the stories that I find or the guests that I find, I have aired things out of order. Like, you know, Stephen Covey messaged me. He's on a book tour. He asked if I could get him in and then do a short turnaround. So sometimes when you get guests like that, you're like, okay. Also Judge Alex was, you know, he wanted to be on and he wanted it turned around quicker. So that does change your content calendar. As far as my kids and their transitions, that's just like, if they're interested in the guest or if I dragged them to the shoot, I'm like, hey, do you want to do the intro for her? Like, you met her, you're into fashion. Or, you know, like when it was James Altucher and his wife, I had my daughter say the one, the only, you know, and give it a little spunk. Yeah. So I have to say some of it is just rolling with the punches. It's not 100% blocked out or planned. Some of it is just rolling with the magic. And I'm not always the best. Like what I do try to do is send each guest a thumbnail, a promo clip, all the links to the show. And then I say to them, like, I hope you like what my daddy says. You're going to be getting one of these, but I hope you like what my dad said. If you know any other daddy's girls, anybody with daddy drama, you know, anybody that has a controversial story, please don't be a stranger. Be a part of my community now. I have a Facebook community, you know, be in touch. So that's what I usually do with each guest.
I think that's phenomenal. Yeah. And it's so interesting to me that when I have that information ready, right, it's not a thing where I have to do a lot of work when I'm a guest, right? When I'm a guest and I don't have to do a lot of work to get this stuff out because someone has already provided it for me, it just makes it a lot easier. And so it's, in a way, it's sort of greasing those wheels, if you will, to make sure the machine runs well. And is that innate for you, or did you pick up that skill in previous work you've done in communication?
I think in the beginning, when I first started doing it, I mean, I'm a social media holic, so I know what's easy for me to share,
uh-huh.
Right? Like if you share it in a story and then you @sign them behind the story, then all they have to do is hit, you know, it notifies them and then they can just share it. And also there's a new feature on Instagram where you can invite them to collaborate. If they accept the invitation, then it shares it automatically to their feed. So I try to do those things where literally they just have to say, add to my story, or yes, I accept. And then it adds it to their feed for them. But then, you know, if they want to do their own separate post, you know, here's the script, here's the thumbnail, here's the promo clip, here's all of the links to your episode. So I try to just make it as easy for them to share as possible, because yes, in the beginning, I didn't do it as easily. And you learn, you know, you learn along the way, like, you know, what worked in getting people to share it the most.
Right. And that's the thing, right? It feels to me like your main thing is play to your strengths, right? So that's, it feels to me like that's such a part of what you're able to do is play to your strengths. And I'm going to pivot a little bit and I'm going to talk to you about where you got your strength, right? You said earlier that some people have daddy drama, some people are daddy's girls, and also that your dad is your biggest cheerleader. And so I'm wondering, how much of a role has he played in you knowing your strengths and building your strengths?
Well, I'll tell you, during this podcast, so many people like ask my dad what he's the most proud about. So I'm getting so many compliments from daddy lately that I'm like freaking unstoppable. Last night, he's like, I admire that, you know, you're moving. I admire that you're selling your house, that you've got four kids, that you're doing this. I'm like, keep telling me, dad. He's like, I don't even think you need me to tell you anymore. I'm like, no, I still like to be pushed. I still like it. Keep going. You know?
Right.
But yeah, he is a very good encourager. And it's funny because, you know, people always say like they want their kids to be better than them, you know, and he's like, I never had a son. So I can't, like his dad said to him, like, son, I hope that you'll live a better life than me. And he's like, I never got a son. So he's like, I hope that all three of my daughters will be better people than me. And he's really big shoes to fill because I've watched him take care of his father. I've watched him take care of his mother. He's taking care of her right now. She's actually, having a really hard time. I've watched him take care of all of his girls, his sisters. He is such a loyal, amazing man. And even though my husband, he's also a loyal, amazing man. Like I did not marry my dad. They are much different. Mm. They're both emotional. They're both loyal. They're both hardworking. But it's interesting. I kind of lost my train of thought there. But
we were talking about how your dad, how you and your dad's relationship helped you identify your strengths. That was the original question. So
yeah,
that
helps. You know, he tells me my strengths, and God, I need to do that for my kids more. But at the same time, yes, he did like say things that he wanted me to do. But if I expressed interest in something, he would always say, go for it. Like he was not one of those dads that's like, oh no, you're not going to become a singer. Oh no, you're not going to, you know, like you must be in the sciences or you must be a doctor or you must be a lawyer. You know, like I was pre-med for 3 years and my junior year, I was like, I really like after 550 clinical hours, this is not what I want to do. And he's like, okay, you know,
I love that you figured that out.
Thank goodness. Yeah. I was a sports med major until my junior year. I took organic chemistry, biochem, calculus, got through it, but slugged through it, had to get tutoring. It did not bring me joy.
Right.
And then I switched to communications, which, God, I was closer to a bachelor's of science. And some parents would not think that was good. And he encouraged it. And I ended up getting a broadcasting degree and getting a job at a radio station. And I got my money's worth out of that Purdue degree. Yes, I did.
I love it. You know, it's amazing to me that you knew at such a young age, in your late teens, early 20s, when something wasn't right for you, right? And I wonder how much of that is your dad just going, you know, I will support what you decide, rather than you feeling pressure to go in a certain direction, right? So I'm wondering who or what made you go into the sports med field to begin with? And what was the turning point? What was the, I guess, pivot point, maybe you can say, that made you go, and I took Orgo? Why did I take Orgo? I'm going to switch.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Actually, I had a singing scholarship to my first college, University of Charleston, and they had one of their strongest programs was the sports med department. And I was into fitness and I wanted to stay fit. And I have to admit, I wanted to meet some athletes.
Woo-hoo! Yeah.
So yeah, the student athletic trainers got to tape the athletes, got to ice the athletes, got to hang with the athletes. And I got to try all different rotations. I worked with the volleyball team and the crew team and the football team. And that was fun. Mm-hmm. But what changed my mind was when an actual disgusting injury occurred, when I saw a football player run into a ref and there was a protruding clavicle through the skin and it
compound fractures. Oh
yes. It cut the ref's neck and I had to help backboard one of the football players. I am not good in that situation. And I learned that. First of all, you know, he's very heavy. Second of all, I did not like all of the blood or, you know, just the excitement of that situation. I did not feel like that was my calling. That right. really was the turning point right then and there.
Wow.
I got hyperventilated, I think.
Yeah.
you know, I've seen a couple medical situations in my life that I did not handle well. Even when I worked at Dairy Queen growing up at 14, this regular customer that would come to me very regularly for biscuits and gravy, one day I turned around to serve it to him and he hit the floor and had an aneurysm in front of me. And I did not handle that well at
wow.
all.
Yeah.
And so a couple situations like that really solidified that was not my calling. Some people are good mm-hmm. under pressure mm-hmm. and can really handle that a lot better than me. I witnessed it, but it wasn't me.
You know what, though? There's different kinds of pressure, too, right? The life is ending, blood is spurting pressure is different than you've got 2 minutes to get this turned around. You know, probably the you've got 2 minutes to get this turned around is something that you can actually do really well.
Yeah.
Spurting blood and zombie things are probably not in your wheelhouse. And, you know, it's interesting because my sister is a doctor and she's an amazing, amazing doctor. And she thrives on that sort of thing. And I was pre-med for a little while, too. And within a week, I went, what are you doing? And then switched to pre-law and then switched to poli-sci and then eventually switched to English. Because, again, as I learned more about myself, I had to sort of go, yeah, this isn't me. And so for you, when you're doing this, when you're talking to people, when you're finding out who they are, which you're, again, incredibly good at, how do you navigate those bumps in the road when there is a certain amount of trauma, when there is a certain amount of tough stuff happening that you have to deal with, that is pressure you can deal with as opposed to like the spurting blood? How do you navigate those traumas coming up for people when you're talking with them?
Yeah, I mean, recently even, I hadn't spoken to someone in years. And during the conversation, she brushed over something that I could tell. You get better at reading people too, like whether they're open about it or whether you can't go there.
Right.
So I could tell that was something that she brushed over and probably wouldn't talk about. So I just said, are you comfortable talking about it?
Mm.
And if not, then you just got to move forward and continue with what they were saying. But, you know, you got to ask. There was another guest that I had on and I read her book and she had spoken about the fact that she was an incest victim. Mm. I had never heard her interviewed about it. And I was like, wow, I would love if she would actually talk about that. And there felt like a natural place in our conversation where she was starting to go there. And again, I just said, would you feel comfortable talking about that? And then she did. So you got to be able to read the situation. It's funny. You know what that reminds me of? There's this guy, Eric Weinstein, that my husband is a huge fan of. And he was speaking at the University of Chicago here recently, but he said it wasn't open to the public. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my husband was like, we're going to go stake out the joint. Like, it's not that big. I know where he's speaking. Right. But we were like, you know, he's giving a speech. He's going to be nervous. It says it's not open to the public. Like, you're much better off like waiting till the speech is over and maybe like going at the tail end. Right. Cause then he's going to be over his nerves from speaking. Like, they might be more lenient about you sneaking in. And then to top it off, we'll bring our cute 3-year-old.
Yes.
It totally worked.
The ace in the hole worked. Woohoo.
So yeah, it's like reading the situation, right? Like, is he going to be willing to meet you if you go and he's getting ready to give a presentation? You know, is the university going to be forgiving of you sneaking in during that presentation? Like, you got to kind of weigh like what people are sharing, how they're sharing it, how much they're sharing, right? And the more you do it, the more you're able to read people better.
Mm. Mm-hmm. For sure. And you know, I'm listening to you and I'm going, but there's something that you're sort of glossing over. And I'm gonna ping it in a second. Here's the thing, right? A lot of people talk. A lot of people do a lot of talking. But taking action, being bold enough to take action, is a completely different thing. It's a completely different skill set. So can you talk a little bit about what that's about? Because like the thing that I say at the end, and you're going to hear me say it at the end of this chat, is reminding people to be bold, right? I always say be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind. Those are the three things, right? But we a lot of us talk, and Gary Vaynerchuk talks about how he's like, I give away everything. I give away everything I know because I know that 99% of you won't ever do jack. You'll hear about it. You'll go, yes, that I should do that. And then you'll never do it. Some people are bold enough to go, I'm going to do it. And then they do it. And you are that person. You are bold enough not only to realize that you need to do it or want to do it, but you actually take the action. How do you do that? What is the mechanism that you use to go from thinking about it to actually taking action?
Yeah, I just don't think about it long. If I have an idea, I have such little time that I just do it. I try it. And I pivot frequently.
Okay.
Like I can give you some examples of that too. Like at the beginning of the pandemic, right before the pandemic, I was working for a big podcaster, influencer, Kathy Heller. And, you know, I started off working for her, booking her big guests. Then it turned into me being a part of her coaching program. Then it was, you know, managing her Facebook group, her Instagram, you know, it just kept building on itself. And then the pandemic happened and, you know, everything was changing. I had four kids at home. And so at the beginning of the pandemic, like some of the people from that group had like messaged me and they were like asking for like one-on-one coaching. I was like, sure, I do that. Then, you know, people were asking me to like help them with their LinkedIn profiles. And I did some of that. Then it was, can you help me with blogging? Then I did some of that. You know, I like tried all these different things that people were like coming to me for. You know, another thing was, can you get me on 10 podcasts? Did some of that. Hey, can you find me guests for your podcast? For my podcast, did some of that. Hey, can you help me market an event? Hey, can you help me fill up an event? I have done so many different things. And then I see what I like, what lights me up, what I don't like, what I should be charging. I talk to other people that are doing what I'm doing. Do I want to partner with them? Do I want to do referrals? Who can I collaborate with? You know, what work do I want to do? What do I just want a piece of? It's just constantly, like I'm saying, experimenting, trying, pivoting, experimenting, trying, pivoting.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
It's really, I'm fascinated by you like crazy because, you know, it's funny. I just went through a 3-month thing where I did the Artist's Way, sort of
live book.
So do I. Three other artists and I did live podcast. We live podcasted going through the book and we just finished this Tuesday. It was really cool. It was a lot of fun. And the thing is, though, everybody had some sort of takeaway, right? Some sort of, I am an artist. I get to think about myself this way. I get to act as if I am, whatever those realizations were. But what you said, you know, think about it, experiment, try, pivot. I love that. And I wonder a little bit about the other piece of this, and that is, what do you do? Again, you're raising four kids, you're married, you're moving, you've got all this stuff going on. This is your profession. What do you do as a professional to hold space for being able to try new things? Are you doing all of this stuff as a volunteer? Are you doing it as someone who's like, no, this is what I do for money, even though it's something I haven't done before?
No, somebody asked me for help. It's a service.
Right.
Totally. I mean, sometimes if I love someone, like, you know, that girl that I interviewed, like I interviewed another podcaster last night and the two of them reminded me of each other. So boom, I'll make intros here and there. But if somebody's like, hey, I'm looking for 10 guests for my show, I'm like, that's a service that I provide, right? Like, that's a strength of mine. Or I'm looking to get on 10 shows, I provide that as a service. But here's the thing too, like if I know someone, they're coming to me and they're like, hey, you know, I could really use like a LinkedIn refresh. I'm like, we can hop on a 15 to 30 minute call and I will give you some suggestions. Now, if you want to do it yourself, have at it. If you want to call me back and pay me to do it, here's the price.
And see, that confidence right there is really crucial, right? A lot of...
Oh, God, it's everything.
Yeah. So talk about that, if you would. You said confident. You just said confidence is everything. Can you talk a little bit about where your confidence comes from? And also, again, to not shrink away from it, right? You go, yes, this is a service I provide. This is one of my strengths. And you step into that power. What mindset do you have to be able to do that?
That's a really good question. Well, here's the thing. If you see somebody selling their services and they're like, it's my first time doing this. I'm putting together a class. I hope some people will show up. Who's going to show up for that?
Fair enough.
Right? If you're like, 6-bedroom, 4.5-bath, I've got 3 offers. I'm closing, you know, by the end of this month. Let me know if you're interested. Right? It's a totally different feeling. And I've learned by making mistakes, right? You show a house, you're like, there's the broken window. You know, sorry for my kids' stuff on the floor. No, you're like, I've gotten 10 calls this week. I haven't even listed it. I've got 3 offers. You know, I'm not even using a broker. Let me know if you'd like a walkthrough.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. And this is a big one. Is that true? When you do it, or is that?
Well, I would never lie. I would never lie. So, yes. Integrity is big to me. Okay. Yes. I would never lie. And I have stopped working for people that there's not an integrity alignment. Here's another thing I've learned. I cannot sell something that I would not buy myself or use myself or sell my friends or family. I have worked for people that it took me a little bit of time to figure out that that was the case. And I've moved on from that. Yes. If I cringe at how they're selling people or the results that they're not giving people, I can't align.
Okay. So how do you figure out what to say? And here's what I mean by that. It's not going to be, oh, there's the broken window. Oh, sorry, my kids spilled juice on the floor. But something in you is going, these are the things I need to focus on. If you were going to stack it this, like give me a hierarchy of inside Rena's brain, this is the most important thing for me to focus on, then followed by this, then followed by this. What would that look like?
You know, it's a lot of it, truthfully, is like, when you get an offer, what did you say to them? When you make a deal, what did you say to them? When they didn't call you back, what did you say to them? Right? Like you try different things. And then when you get the close, then you know what works. So like when I sold sponsorships for a Gary V event, what worked to get the first sponsor? Rinse, recycle, repeat, right? Or jazz it up a little bit more.
When I love
that. Didn't get a call back or they weren't interested or you didn't get to the right person, right? Like, so much of everything that I have done has been like, ooh, that worked. Oh, that really didn't work. Right?
I love it. So it sounds to me like you evaluate and assess and then move on, evaluate, assess, and then move on.
It's true.
Let me ask you this. And I know we're going deep into the recesses, hopefully, of how your mind works. Because you fascinate me. I love it. Are you more intuitive or are you more analytical?
I think it's more intuitive.
Okay.
Like my body reacts to mistakes, you know, sometimes or misalignments. Sometimes I'm like, oh my God, I'm nauseous over that interaction. Then you're like, okay, I got to listen to that. Like
right.
If something doesn't feel good, I'm getting better at saying I'm not going to force it.
That's amazing to me because I know a lot of people who keep banging their heads against a particular kind of wall. And I get to the place pretty quickly now. I didn't used to, but pretty quickly now I go, okay, my head hurts. I think I need to stop banging my head against this particular door. And yet it takes us a long time. It takes us a while, I think, to get to the place where we're like, yeah, I'm not sure that this is good for me. This feels funny. Like you said, my body reacts. How, if somebody were to come to you and go, okay, Rena, how do I learn how to listen to that? What would your advice be?
How does it make you feel interacting with that person? Right?
Like, yeah.
That's what I would say. Like when I just interviewed that chick at the new studio a couple of nights ago, I left there wanting to sing and dance in my car and turn up the radio and hang out with my daughter.
Awesome. Right?
I've also been to shoots where I've shot 7 people back to back. I'm a little bit exhausted. It was too much. I'm like, maybe I should have only booked 4 guests. Right? You've got to feel like afterwards, or after the interaction, or after the work that you've done, you got to reflect on it somewhat, right? Like take a little evaluation, take stock. And you can tell it even in podcast interviews. You know when they go well, you know when you're going somewhere good, or you know where you're like, maybe I needed like a round 2, or maybe I should have asked things different. Right?
Yeah, no, for sure. For absolutely. And that's the thing, though. Again, we come back to this notion of self-awareness and being
important.
It is. I agree. And being able to sort of intuit what's working here, what's not working. And do you push through or do you go, okay, I'm going to pull back and regroup? And at some point, you learned that. At some point, you learned, hey, this isn't working for me, or this isn't good for me, or maybe this is good for me and I should follow it.
I'd love to add to that a little bit. Because you asked if I was intuitive or analytical. And I will say that more recently too, I have started to pay attention to not like the number of downloads, but like what titles are getting the most listens, like what subjects are getting the most listens, what posts or topics are they interacting with the most?
Right, right. Absolutely. And those are
the kind of guests and stories and topics that the people who are into me want to hear.
Right. And again, you're evaluating, right? You're going back and you're going, what worked here? What didn't work here?
Exactly.
And so when you're doing that and you have your dad on your show, how does that work with your dad being on the show? And I'm not talking about, is he judging you? Because we've already established that he really doesn't. He supports you. But how does it work when you're doing a show with one of the biggest influences of your life and things don't go as well as they could?
You know, it's funny. My dad, like truthfully, my entire life has been that guy who does not care what people think. I mean, like,
awesome.
It's crazy. Like growing up, I didn't appreciate that. It was actually sometimes embarrassing. Like if somebody's having a birthday party outside, my dad is the guy that will like go sing too. And I'm like mortified. Mm. Or, you know, like we grew up in Kentucky, everybody's driving a truck. He rolls up in his big Cadillac and honks. I'm like, can you pick me up down the block? Like my dad has always been comfortable in his skin. He's not a people pleaser. And so, you know what? If somebody disagrees with what he says at the end, he's gotten into it with only a couple guests where I'm like, Dad, just let it go. You've expressed yourself. But for the most part, he's just okay with like him being himself and being honest and weighing in without being judged.
Amazing.
Feeling judged. Like he doesn't take it personal.
Right. And that's so important. I mean, for all of us, I love what RuPaul says, what people say about me behind my back is none of my business. You know, I just think that's great.
Yes, that is great. I love that. And he definitely lives that way.
I think that's great. He embodies it. You know, what's funny, Rena, outside of the fact that my dad was abusive as all get out, you and I have very similar sort of upbringings. My dad drove a Cadillac too, didn't really care what other people thought. But also I worked at a Baskin Robbins, not a Dairy Queen, and I'm one of 3 girls just like you are. And it's really interesting. We have as I'm hearing you talk about this, I'm like, wow, we have a lot in common. Our dads being completely different people, of course, because your dad is not abusive and is instead your biggest supporter. So when you're thinking about that, your past and how you and your dad interact, what role does he play now? You're an adult, you have your own kids, you have your own life. What role does he play now when you're stuck?
I literally still call him every single day, multiple times a day. Right now, he is stuck himself. My grandmother is 93. She's rapidly declining. He flew out there to help take care of her and give the aid a break. And as much as I need him, he needs me. I'm actually flying out there in about a week to be with both of them. Hopefully I'll make it in time and support him as well. It's weird. Like, my dad's been like best friends with his parents and I feel best friends with him, but you know, God, I'm stuck. I was like, my husband's moving to Texas 7 weeks ahead of me. You know, I'm going to be stuck with four kids, haven't sold the house yet, but I just am like, this is going to make me stronger. New opportunities. This is going to make me up level. I'm going to be a badass. You know, like, there are moments where I feel like I'm going to cry, but I just know that everything will work itself out. And I've seen it time and time again.
Where do you get that faith? Where do you get the faith that everything is going to work out?
You know, I have produced television shows that literally the day of, every freaking story has backed out. Yeah. And wow. I like, you get on the damn phone and you find another story, and sometimes you make one story go six segments. I know that it always works out because I'm like, how the heck did we pull that off? Or, you know, when I was a post-production supervisor for Nanny, the network pulled a show like in under 24 hours, which it takes a week for all the editors to edit one episode, right? And like, they took the one that was going to air the next week and they did a 24-hour shift. They brought people on extra. It will get out the door. Like, if you have an air date or if you have a deliverable, it will happen. It will be stressful, but it's not going to last forever. And I'm like, okay, you know what? 7 weeks, I'm going to have to take some podcasts off my schedule. I'm going to have to be there for my children more. I'm going to have to, you know, do all the doctor's appointments. I'm going to have to do all the shadowing of the school. I'm going to have to keep up the Sabbath dinner and I'll be the one making the kiddish over Friday night, you know, but it's not forever, right? Like, there are periods where you're coasting more and there are periods where you're pushing yourself to, you know, earn your worth.
For sure. Yeah. My husband and I talk about how only one of us is allowed to go crazy at a time. So when he's super busy, I have to hold it together. And when I'm super busy, he has to hold it together. And I liken it to kite and tether, right? Sometimes you're the kite and sometimes you have to be the tether. And sometimes, you know, you switch, right? So
yeah.
Who is your tether?
Oh my gosh, that is a great question. To be honest, I would not be able to do half of what I do if it wasn't for my husband. He does so much to support me. And right now I'm going to have to be his tether because his job wanted him to start sooner than we expected. And so, you know, I have a kid that's graduating eighth grade and I want him to be able to finish his eighth grade year and have that graduation. You know, obviously my husband will fly in for that, but I also want my husband to be able to start this job, not be stressed with everything we have to do to get him there.
Right.
And we'll be okay. You know, let him start in a calm and then we'll just keep taking steps towards getting to be together.
It sounds like a lovely and wonderful. No, seriously, it does. It sounds like a lovely relationship that you have, because there are a lot of people who the relationships are very one-sided. But you two seem like you're taking the sort of creative and innovative ways to make this work, even though it's going to be upending almost everything in your lives. So kudos.
You know what's so cool about it? Like, you know, I was saying that my husband isn't exactly like my dad. So my dad is a workaholic and my husband is all about balance. And you know what though? He's solid. Like, he's the breadwinner. He's held down the steady job and let me have the creative freelance all over the place, you know, career path. And so when he decided that, you know, he wanted this new company and he was just going to quit where he was at, he's never done that in 15 years. So I was like, that's kind of exciting. I was like, all right, you know, I support that. That's a risk. That's an up level, right? But, you know, my husband brought calm and stability into my workaholic life. Like, you know, I was living in LA and trying to make as much money as possible and climb the entertainment scene. And he was getting his PhD at Berkeley and, you know, putting locks on my door and making sure I was safe in this big city I was living in. And he was into yoga and, getting a midwife for, you know, our children delivery. He just, yeah, like, he is so non-conventional and just introduced me to things that I would not have considered. And he's still my balance. Like, he is like, I am better off getting a full night's sleep than trying to jam in all of this work. And me, on the other hand, I'll stay up till 2 a.m. to get it all done. But he's like, I am going to be a better worker if I sleep and get up early. So he just introduces me to like trying things differently and to having more balance and being more productive.
I love that. I do. I think that's so wonderful that you're able to have that combination of the two of you, and you're already doing Kite and Tether, which I think is great. Rena, I am so ridiculously grateful that you took the time to be on the show. I would love it if you don't mind before, but I have just one more really closing question that I ask everybody who comes on the show, but I would love it if you would tell me where people can find your various podcasts and your website, people who want to work with you with one of the many services that you provide, but also just to hear some of the really cool stories that you are, again, teasing out of people in your own shows, which are incredible. I've been listening and they're great.
Thank you so much. Yeah, bettercalldaddy.com, and for my business, megawattsproductions.com. And you can find me on LinkedIn. I am a LinkedInaholic, Rena Friedman Watts.
That was great. A LinkedInaholic. That's fantastic. And, you know, it's interesting. The thing that you said just a little while ago, like what are the things that are most successful? What are the things that are most that get the most responses? You know this, it seems to me, because you are a social media aholic. Is there another way to learn this stuff, or is it just, yeah, I delved into it and I really have worked that part of it?
It's a long play, but I will say I don't really get TikTok. I feel like TikTok is my kids' generation, and I haven't jumped on that train. I think go where you're comfortable, go where you enjoy being, because you're going to create better there. So I love Instagram now, and I really just started that because I was working for an influencer that her whole following was there. But then I started seeing how to do that pretty well. LinkedIn, I used for a couple corporate jobs that I had. And so I spent 8 hours a day interacting on there. And so I got really good at it. And so I've just kept up doing that because I learned that from some jobs that I've had, and I built my biggest following there. Mm. Yeah. But I feel like I understand LinkedIn. Over the pandemic and over the last 2 years, I've turned my Facebook more professional. I think it's important to be recognizable across platforms. So if you're Rena Friedman Watts on LinkedIn, then you should be Rena Friedman Watts on Facebook and Instagram as well. I haven't changed my Twitter yet because I don't get the most interaction there, but on each platform, you just want to make sure that they're all linked to each other, that you have the same picture, the same brand. You can present yourself differently in how you do the posts, because each platform has their own style or format. But I just think make it easy for people to find you in all of those places.
That's great advice. I love it. And thank you for giving it. I'm really grateful that you took the time to be here. And if you're listening to this, do not go away, because, if you're a member of the Coffee by the Water Club, you're going to get a bonus episode. Rena's been gracious enough to agree to come back for a bonus episode, and you're going to be able to get that in the Coffee by the Water Club. But I now have the very last question that I always ask everybody who comes on the show. And the question is silly, but I find that it yields some profound answers, and it is this. If you had an airplane that could skywrite anything for the whole world to see, what would you say?
My favorite quote is, I was once beautiful, but now I am myself, but my daughter changed it to, I was once beautiful and I still am.
I love it.
So I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, I love that. My old housemate said, I was born blonde and I choose to remain that way. It's kind of like the same thing. Like, oh yeah, you get to choose how you feel. You get to choose how to be and who you are and be that. And I love that. I love that. Thank you. Rena, that was wonderful. I am grateful to you, and I'm grateful to you if you're listening to this. If you enjoyed the episode, go find Rena Friedman Watts. You need to obviously know more about her and about her podcast and about the amazing work she's doing. I am Isolde Trachtenberg. This is the Innovative Mindset Podcast. If you want to know more, you know where to find me at Isolde T pretty much everywhere. See, following Rena's good advice. And until next time, I remind you to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to the podcast if you're new, and it would mean the world to me if you told a friend about it. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2022. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope. Until next time, remember to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind. Thank you.